Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on Thursday, the 30th of August, the year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk with Bill Reagan about the House of Wickersham. Ed Byerski will get our appetite ready for the local food festival. And Nancy DeCherney will be giving us a rundown on art happenings in the capital city during Arts Up. That read is Almanac Music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for tonight, mostly clear skies with patchy fog later on, low temperatures around 40 degrees. Friday, partly cloudy skies with high temperatures around 58 degrees. Friday night, partly cloudy with low temperatures around 47 degrees. Saturday looks like mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and high temperatures around 56 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. This week at the Republican National Convention, Ron Paul delegates were offended that party leaders stripped the Texas congressman of some of his delegates. As Matt Laszlo reports, some Alaska Natives were also offended by the incident.
On Tuesday, Congressman Ron Paul supporters from Maine walked out of the convention. They were angry that Republican leaders weren't going to let them cast ballots for Paul. Alaska delegate Joe White Cloud Schwartz was pledged to former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum. He doesn't consider himself a Ron Paul supporter, but says the way party leaders treated Paul delegates impacted him.
After what happened today on the floor, I will not vote for that ticket now.
He says he wants to set an example to Republican party leaders.
And I will not support people who do that kind of stuff. It's against my religion, my faith.
President Obama's not going to get your support.
No, I'll probably vote third party or sit it out.
Even Ron Paul himself says he's still undecided about whether Mitt Romney will get his vote this fall. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Tampa.
Native hunters in southeast Alaska share concerns with the head of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Marine mammals are protected by federal law, but Alaska Natives are allowed to hunt them. Some say the regulations on sea otter pelts are confusing and have led to scrapes with the law. Ed Ronco reports.
Sitting at a table inside the Sitka Tribe of Alaska's community house, Dan Ash heard stories like this one.
You guys told me I broke the law because I put a zipper in my coat, and I put two snaps in my hat, and for 7 years I was scared to death.
Boyd Diedrichson's story goes back to the 1980s, when federal agents seized a parka and a hat that he had made out of sea otter pelts. Diedrichson added a metal zipper to the parka and metal snaps to the hat, and because of that, the government said it did not qualify as traditional, and as a result, could not be sold. A federal judge in Anchorage ended up ruling in Diedrichson's favor.
He busted me three times on three things, and I won every case. It's just that it's significantly altered. I know what that means.
But, said Diedrichson and others assembled at the meeting, not everyone does know what it means. He said a lot of ambiguity remains, especially when it comes to different federal agents having a different take on what counts as a significantly altered otter pelt. Ash told reporters that he understood the frustration.
Yeah, I think there is some common ground here, and I think the key is to try to make a step forward and not try to bite off too much. And
one idea is to have a workshop on the regulations where stakeholders get together and make sure that they're clear on what the rules mean. Ash says it would be a good way to reach clarity on some of the government's definitions. For National Native News, this is Ed Ronco in Sitka, Alaska.
The Oneida Nation in upstate New York says it's promising to reinvest much of its revenues from its Turning Stone Casino to the local economy. As North Country Public Radio's David Summerstein reports, the vow comes with New York poised to allow non-Native-owned casinos.
The Oneida Nation released what it calls a responsible gaming pledge this week. It includes vows to create good-paying jobs that include health care and pensions, and investing, quote, a majority of its casino profits in the central New York region. The Turning Stone Casino and Resort is estimated to make hundreds of millions of dollars a year. It employs more than 4,000 people. Nation Representative Ray Halbritter said in a written statement the promise is made with the belief that New York will support his casino, quote, rather than advance policies that would undermine existing economic development. Halbritter is referring to Governor Andrew Cuomo's plan to amend the state constitution to allow up to 7 non-Native-owned casinos to be built. Those would, of course, compete with Turning Stone. In addition to the Oneida Nation, the Seneca Nation runs 3 casinos in New York, the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe 1. For National Native News, I'm David Summerstein in Canton, New York.
On this day in 2010, the Notabi Gay Third Foundation announced the names of 14 Native youth to help with the MB3 Golf Challenge to give them experience with golf tournaments. The event raises money for the foundation's work on Native youth health and wellness. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kowanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a June afternoon. Our first guest is Bill Reagan. He's an Alaska State Parks volunteer at the House of Wickersham. He's here to talk about the House of Wickersham and the judge himself. Bill, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thank you for inviting me, Jeff. Pleasure to be here.
So tell me about the beginnings of the House of Wickersham located on 7th Street in downtown Juneau.
Well, it was built in 1898 by one of the gold mine executives, Hammond. There were several families that lived in there prior to the Wickershams buying it, including Bartlett Thane. The judge, he and his second wife, Grace, bought it in 1928. They got married that year after his first wife, Deb, had died in 1926 of TB. They had been married for 46 years, and Grace was a local widower. And they bought the house that year together, and they spent, they cost them $6,000, and they spent $4,000 renovating, including adding the sun porch, which is very prominent to the house today, and made a new entrance on 7th Street. Of course, he lived there till his death in 39. She lived there to her death in 63. Then her niece inherited it, and she lived there until the early 80s, and it was bought by the state of Alaska in 84, and has been a state historic site ever since that year.
Tell me about Judge Wickersham, please.
Well, the judge was very influential in the early history of Alaska, having come here in 1900 out of Tacoma, Washington. He was born in rural Illinois in 1857, and as a young man, moved to Springfield, Illinois, and lived in the law office of the next governor there. And to support himself, he did odd jobs and paid $5 a month, but he had access to the law library while he lived there. And from self-study and with only an eighth-grade education, he passed the Illinois Bar in 1880. And that was the beginning of his career. And then he moved his family to Tacoma in 1883. And there he was a city attorney and also had a law practice. And he was a probate judge. And then from 1898 to 1900, he was in the Washington State Legislature. And then in 1900, President McKinley appointed him to the newly established 3rd District of Alaska. Prior to that, there was one here in Juneau, and there was the second district was in Nome. That left the interior pretty well without a judge, so that's when Congress established the 3rd District, and that's how Judge Wickersham ended up here in 1900. He established his first court in Eagle, there on the Yukon border, on the Yukon River. There he built a courthouse and a log cabin for his family. And he stayed there until 1903 when gold was discovered in Fairbanks. It was known as Bartlett's Cache at that time. And he told the folks that they'd changed the name to Fairbanks. He would move his court there. They did. And that's how he ended up in moving his court to Fairbanks. But Fairbanks was a senator of Indiana, was very influential in his getting his judgeship here in Alaska. So that's how he honored him. And that's how Fairbanks got its name. And there he built another courthouse. Plus his wife, Debbie, said, I want a real house. So he built one of the first frame houses there in Fairbanks. And it's still there today. It was moved from the original location to Pioneer Park, where a lot of old historic buildings have been moved, including one of the steer boats there also. And, of course, he was there for a number of years, but he ended up here in Juneau in the early 1920s and had a law practice here. And also, of course, then he represented Alaska and as the non-voting delegate for Alaska Territory after his 8 years as a circuit judge, that from 1909 to 1920, and then again in 1931 to 33. And, of course, while he was in Congress, he got many bills passed that were very, very very, very influential in the early history of Alaska, including the 1912 Second Organic Act, which gave Alaska its territorial status. Before that, it was just a district, and they had no home rule. So the Home Rule Act gave them, in 1912, gave them their own legislature. Of course, the governor was continually appointed by the president until it became a state. And that's where we kind of standed until, you know, that time.
I'm talking with Bill Reagan, Alaska State Parks volunteer, about the House of Wickersham. What kind of historical events might a fly or a mosquito on the wall be witness to?
In the House of Wickersham? Mm-hmm. For the judge's time? Well, by this time, by the time he married Grace, she had a very calming influence on him. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he was very always an outspoken advocate for the state. He always was fighting big business, which was always a big influence up here, and bureaucratic corruption. So I'm sure that he and Grace had many discussions regarding that, because he was, even to his death, he was always fighting corruption and big business, and he was always a very big advocate for the native population. He was always continually giving them advice, and he even during his term as a circuit judge, many of his cases involved translating Indian mores into the white man's law, because, of course, a lot of people did not understand all the native mores. So he, of course, helped them in that way by helping to translate their mores.
Last Friday was Judge Wickersham's birth anniversary, and we were able to take a tour of it, a self-guided tour. How many self-guided tours do you have a week or a month?
Well, it depends. Like today, there's only two cruise ships in, so I don't get as many visitors. Of course, Tuesday there were five cruise ships. The average day is four. But so far this month, the month of August, I've had over 700 visitors, most of them off the cruise ships. I have had some local visitors.
That's
and
amazing.
Then in July, I also had over 700.
Everywhere you turn, lights memorabilia. Could you give us a few highlights, please, about the memorabilia that's around the house?
Well, the judge, of course, even before he came to moved west, even in Illinois, he had excavated some of the Indian ruins there, and so he was already interested in the etymology of native populations, and he continued that. Of course, his 8 years took him all over Alaska as a circuit judge, and he collected many memorabilia. A lot of them are mentioned in his diaries, in which he transcribed into his book, Yukon Tales and Trails and Trials, which he published in 1938, the year before he died. And even there, he mentions acquiring some of the memorabilia and the artifacts, how he acquired them throughout the state.
What are some other highlights of as far as the memorabilia goes?
There are a lot of his memorabilia. There's a lot of campaign badges. He was very involved in the Republican Party. Of course, in 1912, he was a very big advocate for Roosevelt. And of course, that year, Roosevelt established his Bull Moose Party, so he became a member of the Bull Moose Party. Of course, that year he split the Republican Party, which I'm sure was a big factor in Wilson being elected that year. He was also involved in many other Republican national conventions. The one in Kansas City in 28, there's a badge there for there. And it's just very interesting to see his career, and you can see in these different memorabilia. There's even a gold spoon that was given to him by the miners outside of Fairbanks the year that they, in 1904, when they dedicated the courthouse, and it has actually nuggets out of the Felix Pedro's mine there. That's one of the highlights. Of course, today it's very heavy, and I'm sure based on today's gold price, it's probably one of the most valuable pieces in the museum.
Tell me a little bit about Ruth Allman and Sourdough.
Well, Ruth, of course, she inherited the house after her aunt died in 63. But she probably lived in the house longer than anybody else because she lived there off and on with her aunt and uncle in the 30s and 40s. And she continued living there, and she took care of her aunt when her health started failing. And, then, of course, after she inherited the house, she continued the tradition going. She used to serve meals there twice a day. And it helped support herself, and she called it living history, and she would give a dialogue about the judge. and Alaskan history and how he fit into all that. And she was a big sourdough aficionado, would you call it? And there was no cookbook about it, so she hand wrote a cookbook on sourdough, and she gave a little dialogue about how sourdough came about and how to do it and how to, you know, there are different recipes. Even the locals today that come and visit mention very fondly about her sourdough waffles. They were quite famous at the time.
The House of Wickersham is run by the Alaska State Parks, and you're a volunteer there. How many tourists, I know we already asked you that one, it's open for tourists. What are the hours of tours?
Currently, I keep the house open Sunday through Friday, 10 to 4. I try to open up a little bit earlier on the days that are more cruise ships in, so I usually get it open by 9, but it's officially 10 to 4. And by appointment, if somebody calls or if somebody's wandering by and I happen to be looking out the window, I let people in. Because I live there on the second floor as a resident volunteer while I'm here for the summer.
And is this tour is a self-guided tour?
Yes, we have the interpretive panels that give you a very detailed history about the judge and a lot of the memorabilia and the artifacts. And people can wander around at their leisure and at their own pace. And I'm there to answer any questions they might have. They also want to know about the house. They also want to know about Alaska. So I try to keep up on Alaskan history and try to be an all-around guide for them.
Is there a cost?
No, there's no cost, and it's free to the public and anybody who wants to come in.
So we're on the air today to see if we can encourage people to learn a little bit more about their local history. Bill Reagan, why should locals visit the House of Wickersham?
Well, a lot of people know about the house, and there are a lot of local people that don't know. And I've had here in the last couple of weeks, since the publicity about the judge's birthday and everything, it's renewed interest, and a lot of people have been there before, but they also want to come see the restoration, how it's going and everything. And there are a lot of people that have never been in the house, and after they come in and they see how the judge had affected their history, they're glad that they have visited it. And a lot of them come back again, and sometimes they bring their friends with them.
Well, and there's parking available. Do most people, when they come up for tours, can take a cab up, or do they walk up?
No, most of the people walk up. There is a space there for parking. If somebody, you know, I do have some people that will drive up. But the majority of the people are tourists off the boats that want to get away from downtown and just want to wander around and learn about the local culture and see the town for themselves. And, of course, sometimes they walk in, they're kind of huffing and puffing, and I say, well, you enjoy that hike up the hill? And they say, yes. And I jokingly say, I guess you're working off some of that cruise food, and they all agree. So there are quite a few, you know, a lot of people want to just wander around and get some exercise and see what's going on in Juneau for themselves.
What's the most rewarding thing for you personally about giving the tours?
Well, I've got to meet people from all over the world and the local people, and it's been my proud and honor and privilege to represent the Alaska State Parks and the people of Alaska in the House of Wickersham and try to portray Alaska in a positive light for the tourist and for the locals, too. And it's just been a real, real privilege for me, and I've really enjoyed it. This is my third summer in the house as a volunteer. We didn't open up last summer because they were restoring the first floor, and that took over a year. And so I got it open back in May and reset up all the displays and everything. This is my fourth summer volunteering for Alaska State Parks. I came up here in 2006, the year I retired. I was a postmaster in Florida, and I'd always wanted to come to Alaska, and that was my opportunity. In 2006, I was up at Chugach State Park. There in the interior outside of Anchorage, and actually lived in a little rustic cabin that would have made Ted Kaczynski proud. We had no water, no heat, no electricity, but we took our showers and our meals in the nature center and helped run the nature center and give nature tours. But we did have a port-a-john that we shared with the bears, but we always let them first in line there.
Bill Reagan, thank you very much for coming down. Could you repeat your hours and your days that are open for locals who may want to come visit with their friends?
Pardon me?
When are you open?
10 to 4. Sunday through Friday. Right. Only day I close is Saturday, but I will open it if somebody calls me, and I'll open it up by appointment.
Phone number?
586-9001.
Anything you'd like to add before we go away?
Come on up. Even the locals, especially the ones that haven't been in the house, a lot of them have been there before it was restored. It was in pretty sad shape prior to the restoration. The wallpaper that Wickersham had put on was deteriorated. and it looks now as it would have in 1898 when it was built. Plus, we just got the new table and chairs that used to sit in the governor's mansion for almost 30 years, and that really sets off the dining room and really sets the mood of the house.
Neil Reagan, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you very much for having me.
Judge, good kind judge. Take a joint to the devil down below. I sliced up my sweet patootie. I gotta read just what I know. And so judge, hear the judge, and send me to the electric chair. Listen to me, Judge. Please now send me to the electric chair. He said, Judge, Your Honor, Mister, Sir, I love that girl so dear. I don't want no bondsman to go my bail, and I don't want to spend no 99 years stuck in your stinking jail. Judge, hear me, judge, or send me to the electric chair. With my Barlow, and then I kind of kicked her in the side, and then I stood there laughing on her while she bubbled up in the so judge, yeah, the judge, and send me to the electric chair.
As a reminder, during whale watch season, NOAA fisheries ask you to keep your distance from endangered humpback whales. Federal law prohibits pursuit or approach within 100 yards. Boaters should operate at a slow, safe speed, limit time with whales to 30 minutes or less, and avoid approaching when other vessels are near. To report a violation or distressed marine mammal, call NOAA Fisheries Hotline at 1-800-853-1964.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, August the 30th, 2012. It's the birthday of the woman who wrote a famous story that begins, "It was on a dreary night of November that I beheld the accomplishment of my toils." the dull yellow eye of the creature open. The story was Frankenstein, considered the first science fiction novel ever written, and the woman was Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley, born in London, 1797. It's the birthday of the woman who said, "The thing about democracy, beloveds, is that it is not neat, orderly, or quiet. It requires a certain relish for confusion." She also said, "I am not anti-gun, I'm pro-knife. Consider the merits of the knife. In the first place, you have to catch up with someone in order to stab him. A general substitution of knives for guns would promote physical fitness. We'd turn into a whole nation of great runners. Plus, knives don't ricochet, and people are seldom killed while cleaning their knives." And the writer was Molly Ivins, born in Monterey, California in 1944, raised in Houston, Texas, went off to New England to college, went to the Columbia School of Journalism, went to Minneapolis to write for the Minneapolis Tribune. There she was the first woman to cover the police beat. And then she moved back to Texas, which became the subject of her writing. She said that she remained cheerful despite Texas politics, that she wrote about the more hilarious aspects of government and so never had to write fiction. She especially liked to poke fun at the Texas state legislature, which she called the Ledge, and George W. Bush, whom she gave the nickname Shrub, and she referred to him as a post-turtle, referring to an old joke. The turtle didn't get there by itself, doesn't belong there, and needs help to get down. She had actually known him when they were teenagers in Houston. Also made fun of Bill Clinton. She said, "If left to my own devices, I'd spend all my time pointing out that he's weaker than bus station chili, but the man is so constantly subjected to such hideous and unfair abuse that I wind up standing up for him on the general principle that some fairness should be applied." Wrote a book about George W. Bush in 2000 and later said, "The next time I tell you someone from Texas should not be president of the United States, please pay attention." Molly Ivins died of breast cancer at the age of 62. She wrote, "Having breast cancer is massive amounts of no fun. First they mutilate you, then they poison you, then they burn you. I have been on blind dates better than that." Here's a poem for today by Dan Lieberthson, entitled Child's Play. I play the World Series with marbles on our vine-laced Persian carpet. Its palaces are bases, its bowers become dugouts where my heroes' cards wait for their manager's hand. I play both sides, home and away, hitter and fielder, as always, no one on my team but me. Adult shapes, fat and crooked, bald and creased or worn thin, edge around me, pass through the house, smiling down, as if to say, "Dear child, you know nothing outside your magic carpet, which one day you'll find is only a rug that will take you no place at all. But I have just jumped an impossible height, caught Roger Maris's hot line drive to right, and brought it back over the fence. The roar of the crowd puts any doubt to rest. In that moment, I am blessed, and that moment is all there is." Child's Play, a poem by Dan Lieberthson from The Pitch is on the Way, used by permission of the poet here on The Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry App, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Egyptians Phoenicians, the Vikings, the Greeks, Babylonians, Danes, and Chinese. On their voyages took enough garlic for weeks, and their enemies died on the breeze. Since biblical times, in all parts of the earth, it has cured countless sufferings and ills. Oh, if we understood what the garlic is worth, we would throw out our poisonous pills. In Bulgaria's mountains and Russia's white plains, people live to 100 years old. For it's juice of the garlic that runs in their veins. Oh, it's worth twice its weight in pure gold. With selenium, germanium, allicin too, it can fight off all types of disease. So if you've got arthritis, TB, or the flu, just say, peel me a garlic loaf, please. Plant some cloves in your garden to keep away worms and the other bad things that kill plants. If you're one of those people concerned about germs, you can drop one or two in your pants. There are spices and vegetables that you can grow. Some are under the ground, some grow tall. Oh, they all have their qualities. This you must know, that the garlic is best of them all. Oh, the garlic is best of them all. Yes, the garlic is best of them all.
Claudia Schmidt and Sally Rogers from a Red House recording a number of years ago. Time is 3:32, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. I thought that was a great way to introduce Ed Byarsky, local grower and garlic expert. Thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thank you, Jeff. That was great. I have never heard that before, but I need to get a copy of that.
So what excites you about garlic?
Oh, the flavor, of course. I mean, I like to plant it. I like to watch it grow. I like to harvest it. But eating it, of course, is the best. And there's a lot of different kinds, varieties that we can grow here in Southeast Alaska that do very well. And Saturday at the food festival, we're going to have some of those to sell and to share and to talk about.
Before we get to that, tell me about edible landscaping, please.
My business, long time ago, started back in the late 80s. When folks asked me to start gardening for them after they saw some of my gardens, I used to only grow edible stuff. I didn't grow any of those wimpy flowers or any of that stuff, and my attitudes have changed about that too, of course, with primroses and lots of other perennials. But I try to give folks a choice for their yards, for their landscapes, having something edible, tasty, maybe also beautiful, functional, ground covers, edible hedges, nice, colorful trees that have flowers and fruit, too.
And you're involved in the locally Alaska-made Farmers Market Local Food Festival.
Yes, and I've been selling produce off and on to folks who ask, and I was asked by Nancy DeCherney to do a workshop at the food festival, so I'll be talking about garlic. How to grow it, how to store it, share a couple of recipes at the same time. So it's a great way to make contact with more either folks who are already gardeners, folks who want to be gardening. This year has been particularly challenging for gardens and gardeners, but with the sunshine gets us all enthusiastic.
What's the secret for dealing with all this rain here in Juneau?
Oh, drainage. Got to have drainage and a good set of rain gear. That's most important. I mean, our rubber suit and just having installed a hot tub at home also is highly therapeutic when I go home and hose off the mud and jump in the hot tub to warm up after a day of playing in the mud.
Farmers Market this Saturday, there's a lot of things going on. You want to talk about them, please, to give a schedule?
Sure. There's the market is the whole show is from 9 till 2 o'clock at the Jack. downtown, and there are workshops, basically 45-minute workshops going on. Darren Snyder starts out at 9:15 on composting. I'll be talking about garlic at 10. Marie Franklin is going to be talking about growing your business at 10:45. 11:30, Suzanne Williams from Douglas will be talking about spring seed starting, and of course we can kind of think about that now, just think about what did well this year and what didn't and what we want more of. 12:15, Rachel Jusler will talk about home brewing, which takes a lot of important stuff out of the garden and turns it into tasty adult beverages. And Michelle Donahue at 1 o'clock will talk about grinding wheat. Then there's some outdoor stuff going on also, fly casting at 11 on the lawn or over in the subport, and invasive plants at 10:30, sustainable food by Scott at 11:30, and Eric Norman at 12:30 will actually be doing, I believe, is going to be demonstrating filleting fish out there on the lawn.
And in addition to the workshops, there's booths available so you can sample some of the items that you're talking about.
Yes, there will be locally grown produce, everything from garlic to zucchinis and fresh greens, hopefully carrots. There will be jams and jellies. I believe the folks will be bringing bread. I've been told they're supposed to be frozen fish, salmon and halibut, I think, also. Usually there are informational booths. There's folks with various different flavored vinegars and olive oils. So there's a lot of stuff that's tasty things we can add to our diet to spice up our lives and to learn about how to grow some of them in our own gardens, in our own yards.
If someone is so inspired, where should they start?
The most important thing is really having some soil. And whether that be just a couple of pots of soil, good potting soil on a deck or on a railing or indoors in a pinch. You can grow some herbs even indoors in small quantities. And then with success, branch out from there into, like I mentioned, well-drained soil, hopefully with sunshine would be good, although we have a hard time influencing that unless we can put some bright lights in our house to brighten up our lives too.
And there'll be a lot of experts and people just wandering around with answers to questions that people might have.
There will be. With Darren Snyder is the extension agent, so he'll be there so folks can ask questions. In the past, the master gardeners have been there to be able to answer questions about gardening and greenhouse growing and other subjects. And again, ask the folks who are selling the stuff. How did you grow these tasty garlic or greens? What varieties do you recommend? So, you know, to talk about buy local, well, grow locally and use these local resources that we have to learn more about how we can feed ourselves here.
And what's going to be at your booth?
I will have, of course, garlic. Planning to have some both male and female kiwi vines, hardy kiwis.
What's the difference?
Well, you get to look closely in the flower. The females have the fruits and the males have the pollen to pollinate the flowers, so you get kiwi fruits. Without that, you know, birds and bees aren't going to do it by themselves.
Biology lesson here in the radio.
Biology 101.
Right. So if Juno Farmers Market Local Food Festival is going on Saturday the 1st from 9 a.m. till 2 p.m. at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. And do you want to talk about anything else?
Well, got to get back out there in the sunshine and pull some weeds and work to discourage slugs, which have been thriving in this beautiful, moist weather that we have been having. A couple more days of this makes us all more enthusiastic as we go into, as our daylight is decreasing. And I suppose when the permanent fund dividends come out, and the specials come out, I suspect there's going to be this mass exodus to go to southerly, sunnier climates, at least for vacations.
All right, I had another question I was going to ask you, but it slipped right out of my brain.
Okay. Well, again, right now, we're still planting. I'm still planting lots of stuff that can grow. Perennials are great to be planted at this time of year. Mother Nature is taking care of most of the watering for us, of course, so don't stop planting. And coming up, the bulbs are starting, fall bulbs, daffodils, tulips and stuff are showing up in the stores. So, again, we're an optimistic bunch. We plant bulbs now for next spring, just like we'll be planting garlic in September and October for next summer's harvest. That's 9 months away, 10 months away.
And Barsky, thank you for coming by. You have a phone number, Ed, about landscaping?
Yes, 789-2299 for advice or shameless commerce.
Okay, thanks, Ed, for coming by.
Thank you, Jeff.
If I were an apple, I'd be very unhappy traveling 4,000 miles or more. From far off Tasmania in a shipping container to a shelf in a New Jersey store. Why should I be tortured when some New Jersey orchard would be totally thrilled to the core? To pick me and crate me and load me and freight me, not 4,000 miles but 4. An apple should be not far from the tree where it ripens in the fall. Locally grown and locally eaten is globally good, good, good for us all. If I were a berry, I expect I'd be very contrary and hardly inclined to get shipped out from Chile to a store in North Philly. Hey, I'd have to be out of my mind. It seems paradoxic and carbon dioxic that we force all our food to commute, wasting gallons of fuel, which we know isn't cool for people or planets or fruit. A berry is fine, not far from its vine, near the farmer's market stall. Locally grown and locally eaten is globally good, good, good for us all. Yeah. Pile of the fruit you might want to take home. Do not buy for your table till you check out the label and determine how far it did roam. Aside from the karma of helping the pharma who lives in your county or state, there is one more good reason to buy what's in season. The taste is incredibly great. So keep buying foods from regional dudes, keep your carbon footprint small. Locally grown and locally eaten is globally good, good, good for us all. Good, good, good for us all.
support comes from listeners like you and from the Juno Artist Gallery, a cooperative featuring the work of over 25 local artists and artisans. The Juno Artist Gallery is open year-round and daily during the summer, located downtown in the Senate Building.
A little bit of music from Eric Holley. This brings us into a conversation with Nancy DeTuna here to talk about what's going on this weekend.
Another exciting week. It is. And such a nice day, too. So, let's see. Of course, all the season tickets are for the Arts and Humanities Council, the Symphony, Perseverance are all up and ready for you to go out and buy some. So check onto the web or come to the Hearthside Books or down to the Jack. Lots of exciting things going on this year. I was really appreciative of Amy Fletcher's article in the paper today about all of the things we got going on. Latitude 58 Theater is still doing their auditions for the best Christmas pageant ever. You can go to their website to register for that. Daughters of the New Moon have a workshop coming. They're bringing in a special guest artist. You can go to the Daughter of the New Moon dance work our website and get information on registering for that. And it's time to submit your entries in the Alaska Positive 2012 competition. That's gone through the Alaska State Museum, so you can go to their website and get that information. All this weekend, there's a special Alaskan beer sampling going on at the Rockwell, so the artist formerly known as the Elks Club, I guess. It's at 109 North Franklin Street. This is going on through the whole week, and it's to benefit the Jack, which is great. We're using the money to help pay off a loan that we had to get new restrooms. So go up there and have a beer. What can I say?
We'll be talking about it tomorrow on Juno Afternoon with Pat Moore.
Excellent. 7 p.m. tonight, it is the start of a two-weekend-long workshop on Argentine tango. A guest artist, Richard Council, is here, brought in by the Dance Loft. The workshop tonight is at the Channel Dance Studio, and I'm not really sure where that is. So you should call 523-1995. The workshops continue through the weekend, mostly at the Old Elks Hall. They're referring to it as the Historic Elks Lodge. On Friday, the Kimball Organ Concert at the State Office Building, of course. Tom Loker is up at the Tram. Dan Hobson's at the Baranoff at the Gold Room. And there's Argentine tangoing going on. Saturday is the huge food festival. This is our fourth annual one. Were you talking with Ed? Is he coming tomorrow?
Just a few minutes ago.
Oh, okay. So lots of things going on there. We have more booths popping up every moment, all kinds of things. People are coming with there'll be salmon demonstrations. There'll be a fly casting workshop. There will be workshops on growing your own business, actually, as well as spring seed starting, all kinds of things. So come on down. It's from 9 until 2 at the Jack. It's free, and it's usually just tons of fun. So also at 9:30 on Saturday, the Juno Economic Development Council is starting up their The Saturday Thing, that where kids get to go and putter with various things. He said they're going to do glass fusing. This is free, but they want the kids to sign up, so register. So call 523-2342 if you'd like your child to go and just tinker with stuff, which is lots of fun.
Please go quickly. This is sign up soon.
Yeah, I did just check with him, and he's got room still. So I think because it was the first one of the year maybe the season, they haven't filled it yet. So do call. 10:30, there's story yoga for kids ages 5 to 12. This is being offered at Rainforest Yoga, which is upstairs from Heritage Coffee on Franklin Street. They're going to be telling stories that are integrated with the various yoga positions and movements. Should be very nice. There's a charge of $12, and you should call 988-3566 to register. The tango workshops go on. They're at 12:30, 2, 3:30, and 8 p.m., and these are at the Historic Elks Lodge, second floor ballroom. I think you can have a beer while you're there. I'm not sure.
And I just got finished calling it Latinos.
Oh, yeah. It's hard to keep up some days, you know. At 1:30, it is the 50th anniversary Juno Symphony Wildlife Cruise, and it's going to be a beautiful day. There will be wine tasting offered by Specialty Imports. There will be live chamber music with Lisa Ibias and Gowa Shah and some of the other symphony performers. It's going to just be a beautiful afternoon. Get there at 1:30. The boat will depart Dawnstadter Harbor, which is Ock Bay Harbor by D. Hartz, promptly at 2. It's $60 for this wonderful event. Supports the 50th anniversary activities, and as I said, what a nice afternoon. 7 p.m., it's the first annual 4th and Gold Spectacular, a benefit for the Holy Trinity Kitchen and McFeeders Hall. This one's $50. You can get tickets at the Jack and at the church and probably at Hearthside Books. There's a lot of opera singers and music and all sorts of things going on both upstairs and downstairs at McFeeders Hall and Holy Trinity. It's at 7 p.m. on Saturday. Another really full day on Saturday. I mean, you just start and just be exhausted by the end of the day.
And at that event, the theater and the rep folks are going to be doing some like behind the scenes stuff.
So you've got that's going on in the McFeeders Hall stuff, and then there's people playing music upstairs, Tom Loker and a whole bunch of Philippe Damerval and the Crawfords, all sorts of folks. Sunday, again, it's the Argentine Tango thing going on. Monday, it's Labor Day, and by gum, we're closing the Juno Arts and Humanities Council offices, so just don't call, okay? We're not going to be there. Next Thursday, though, at 4 p.m. is the Early Learning Carnival for children ages 5 and under. This is offered by AEYC, Partnerships for Families and Children. It's free. There's eye testing. There's games. There's a whole bunch of stuff for children. It's at Harborview Elementary School, 789-1235. So all kinds of stuff to do this weekend and such a beautiful day. That's all I have for you.
Anthony Turner, thank you for coming by today and talking about things that are going on in the capital city. Again, if you need more information about these activities or other ones, check out their website at www.jahc.org.
Or go to ktoo.org.
On 4 o'clock, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Switzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonat at 91.9. And in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. Also live online at www.ktoo.org. Weather forecast for tonight, mostly clear skies with patchy fog later on, low temperatures around 41 degrees, southwest winds to 10 miles per hour, becoming southeast to 5 miles per hour later on. Sunny skies expected on Friday with patchy fog in the morning and high temperatures around 59 degrees, southwest winds to 10 miles per hour. Friday night, most partly cloudy skies with low temperatures around 47 degrees. Saturday, rain likely in the afternoon with high temperatures around 56 degrees. Saturday night looks like rain, and Sunday through Monday night looks like showers are likely with high temperatures around 55 degrees. Well, next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon today, and have a great evening. Enjoy the sun when you can.
Upstairs in his house, he got a two-story house. He's upstairs on laying on the pool table. Said he had 2 foot of water upstairs.
Rescues continue in the aftermath of Hurricane Isaac. It's Thursday, August 30th, and this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Blogg. Coming up, we'll hear from Louisiana, where search and rescue operations are underway after massive flooding along the Gulf Coast. We'll hear about Mitt Romney's long journey to the Republican nomination. There were plenty of roadblocks, including a long line of challengers.